It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Super Bowl 50 will be played Sunday at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California, home of the San Francisco 49ers. And many people watching may be looking forward to the ads as much as the game. The Super Bowl has become a big event in the advertising world, and in our age of social media, the ads are being released in advance. Here to look at 50 years of Super Bowl ads are Ron Dick, Associate Professor of Sports Marketing at Duquesne University. Ron, welcome back to the program.
Happy to be here, Paul.
And Audrey Guskey, Marketing Professor at Duquesne University. Audrey Guskey, good to have you with
Thanks,
us.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be here.
So the Super Bowl for many years has been a target for advertisers, the Super Bowl telecast. Was it always this way, starting from Super Bowl I? And if not, when did advertisers realize that this was a way to put a client's product in front of a lot of eyeballs?
Well, basically when it started was from 1984, that commercial we remember from Apple and Macintosh. It was very futuristic, and they had, it was a 60-second spot, and it basically was highlighting the new Mac that they were introducing. And so that really set things in place as far as advertisers realizing, hey, wait a minute, this is a great opportunity for us. We've got millions of eyeballs watching it, so let's take advantage of it and, you know, really add some creative, fun commercials that people are going to pay attention to and talk about for a long time.
What was it like before that, Ron? I mean, why did it take 20 years for advertisers to have the light bulb go off?
The original Super Bowl may have sold out, but you're going to find this hard to believe, but not every Super Bowl has sold out of ticket sales. And I can go back to the one at Rice University in Houston, Texas, and that one, I think it was the Vikings and the Dolphins, did not
You're
sell
correct.
Out.
You're correct, yeah.
And it's hard for us to look back 45, 50 years ago and realize a sports world like this, and soccer is obviously the number one sport in the world, whether we believe it to be or not, the most popular sports to view in 1970 were horse racing, boxing, Muhammad Ali, George Frazier, Foreman, et cetera, and baseball. They were the three most popular sports. Football did not take off until after 1970 with Monday Night Football, when Pete Rozelle, the commissioner, and Rune Arledge, who was the with ABC, said, let's have one game, you know, Friday night's high school, Saturday's college, let's Sunday's football for the NFL. Let's play one more game on Monday. That really took it to the national audience on Monday Night Football on ABC. Then, in 1979, of course, ESPN was born in September, and that changed the game, right? We were going to have something come into our house like a phone line. It was going to be stuck in the back of our TV set, and this guy, Ted Turner from Atlanta, said, I'm going to have an all-network that is just news. And people would say, oh, no, that's not the way news is supposed to be consumed. All it is you work till 5, you go home, you have dinner. 6 o'clock, I think, was the local news.
Right.
6:30 to 7 was Walter Cronkite, and that's the way it was. And then prime time. 7 to 11, local news again, 11:30, and then Johnny Carson with a late night show. That's for decades we did things. But once cable came into the household, that was a game changer.
So it not only made news a 24-hour operation, but sports played a bigger part in the American consciousness, particularly football, apparently.
I think so. I think that's when it really exploded. And yes, a lot of people do point to that 1984. And that was done in black and white, Paul. And when you do a commercial or anything in black and white, it makes it more dramatic.
Well, Orson Welles said, yeah. It
was, Orson Welles, black
more
and white.
Emotive.
They were on an assembly line and they were just falling off, if you remember.
Boy, barely. For some reason, I don't remember that ad as well as some of the other ones. I think.
Well, the reason you don't remember it was only aired once. And it's interesting, it was a 60-second spot, which was even rare back then. And so if you go on YouTube, we're all watching it now, but basically people, you know, were surprised by it because it was so futuristic. And this woman was coming, they were like zombie people, mm-hmm. and she throws a hatchet or something, and the screen explodes.
Yes.
And then it's like the future is here. I mean, it's a pretty awesome commercial, and people tend to remember it a lot.
I'll have to go back and rewatch that. So what sells now? People say sex sells, and, you know, it's not like we don't see that enough in advertising, but is that what is still selling ads, or what are some of the other things that we're seeing in terms of the trend that advertisers are going in to get people's attention?
Well, I have my 7 C's of Super Bowl ads that tend to work, Paul. So okay. The first one is comedy, has to be funny. Then we've got critters, animals, dogs, monkeys, people like as well. Cute little babies and things. Has to be clever, creative, customized. Nowadays, the big thing in Super Bowl advertising is not just the ad that you're watching during the Super Bowl, but you want people to become involved, whether they're creating the ads, they're going online, voting for the ads that they like, they're voting for the ending that they want. They're somehow involved and attached through social media watching. And the last C is celebs. We love celebrities. Hmm. And that probably started back almost with the Mean Joe Green commercial. With the
Coke
and the little kid.
Right.
And then Franco Harris was just featured last year as well on a Super Bowl ad. And way back, we had Joe Namath and Farrah Fawcett, if you remember, for the Noxzema ad. So that was a sexy and also celebrity type of ad.
There you go. So you just mentioned all of the critical elements involved in selling or getting people's attention if you want to sell a product. And Ron, back in 1967, the first Super Bowl ad was going for $42,000. Mm-hmm. It's a little more expensive today, isn't it?
It's a lot more expensive. What is it up to?
How much? I mean, it's 3 million? Maximum of $5
million. For a 60-second ad?
For a 30-second spot. And wow. Interestingly, in the past 10 years, it went up 75%. Mm-hmm. So it is really a hot place to be. It's the Madison Avenue of Super Bowl advertising. And in reality, people want to be in the big game. And a lot of the traditional players, like the Anheuser-Busch, Pepsi's always there. But Ford, interestingly, is not there this year because they feel they can get more bang for their buck than by using social media. And unless you're introducing a new product and want awareness, a lot of times advertisers will not be there.
How many people will be watching? What's the average tune-in rate for this Super Bowl going to be?
In 1967, there weren't 320 million people in the United States. I think it was around 100 million, give or take. So we have three times the amount. And more importantly than that is this game is being seen globally. There are people that'll watch it just for the commercials. And then if you think about the products that they advertise, fundamentally, they are items that we all consume, eat them, use them. They're inexpensive items, and they're things that you can buy globally. You can buy them in the network, in the Tokyo, Beijing, Berlin, Rome, Italy, such as the fundamental things they sell. We are here in Pittsburgh, so I'll use the word pop, but anywhere outside of Allegheny County, I'll say soda, right? Chips, Doritos, QSR, quick service restaurants, fast food, Burger King, McDonald's, beer, yes, cars, FedEx, UPS, movies. These are all relatively inexpensive things that whether that I'm on food stamps or I'm a millionaire many times over, I will consume these things. And they can be seen globally and purchased globally. So that's why I think the ads have gone up so much recently.
And the attention being paid to the ads. It used to be that people watching the Super Bowl or just about anything on television wanted to avoid the ads. That's when you got up to take a bathroom break or to go get a beer. Mm-hmm. But now you have people who are sticking around to watch those ads. Is that part of the phenomenon of the increased creativity that these ads have?
Well, they found that 25% of the people who watch the Super Bowl are watching it specifically for the ads. So that's absolutely incredible. And when you think about it, the ads have really become such a huge part of the Super Bowl itself. And interestingly, this year we have 13 new advertisers who are coming in to the Super Bowl, which is a record number. Amazon has never advertised before. Colgate. You've got a company called Marmot that does outdoor clothing. PayPal's there. LG is there. So Pokemon is going to be there. Quicken Loans, SunTrust. So these are companies that are all household names, but they've never advertised in the Super Bowl. And they realize that this is like a huge phenomenon. People love to talk about the Super Bowl ads. And interestingly, remember back in the day, they never did even teasers. You didn't know what anybody was going to do as far as their ads. Now they're all out there on social media, and you can watch probably 80% of them, and then you can even talk about them before the Super Bowl. Then when you're with your friends having the party, you can say, oh, I love this one, and then everyone pays attention to it.
Do you get less bang for your buck, though, if somebody's already seen your ad?
It depends. Sometimes you get more, sometimes you get less, and that's sort of the everybody's releasing them now, so they must be feeling that they're getting more bang for their buck. And also, everybody's doing it, so they don't want to be the only one that nobody knows what their commercial is. Sometimes they'll just put a teaser out, but a lot of times they'll put the full commercial out.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking about ads in the Super Bowl with Ron Dick, Associate Professor of Sports Marketing at Duquesne University, and Audrey Guskey, who is Marketing Professor at Duquesne University, and two people who clearly have a lot of insight into this. I'm wondering if anybody who has tickets or had tickets to go to the Super Bowl maybe tried to scalp them so that they could stay home and watch the commercials. Do you suppose anybody is that crazy about the commercials that they would do that?
I'm thinking probably not. If you're going to the game, you're going to go to the big game. But and of course, you can always, you know, watch it afterwards. You can set your DVR to get a copy of it. But, you know, it's big news because we're talking about it today with you on your show. And, you know, everybody's talking about it beforehand, afterhand, the big buzz, because people are really excited. My read on Ron, I don't know what your read is, but I believe that the commercials aren't as interesting, exciting, fun, and creative as they used to be in the past.
Ron, what do you think?
I thought the ones last year, I haven't seen the ones for this year yet, even though they're available on the internet. Last year's, I thought they were fairly,
did you like them?
I thought they were fairly entertaining from what I can remember of them. I remember the one in particular with Britney Spears, where they showed her with Pepsi a few years ago, where what she would look like if she was in the 1940s, the 50s, the 60s. And the thing was like 2.5 minutes or 2 minutes long. And then that was in the first quarter. Then they would show the other one in the second quarter, and that was like 90 seconds. Then it was like 60. Oh, I saw that again. No, you saw a highlight of the previous commercial with her because she was linked with Pepsi pretty strongly for the Generation X people. So there's just certain ones that really jump. I think Budweiser with the horses, you know, and the dogs, you know. I mean, there's certain ones that I remember distinctively.
And because this is the 50th anniversary of the Super Bowl, this is also the 50th anniversary of Super Bowl ads. And so a lot of advertisers are really celebrating this. So my advice to all our listeners is go out there. USA Today, as most of us know, have an ad meter. So the day after the Super Bowl, they have a number of consumers who are picking their favorite ads, and typically Pepsi and Budweiser are on the top. But this year, they have the top 50 Super Bowl ads of all time, and they are phenomenal.
Well, let's get into some of those. What would be some of the ones that we – there's probably some that on that list that we would know, that we would remember.
We would know most of them. And you know, you've got the Seinfeld and the Superman one, which was from American Express. You've got the Polar Bears from Coke. You've got the Noxzema one that we've talked about with Farrah Fawcett and Joe Namath. You've got Spuds McKenzie. Remember him?
Oh, my goodness.
And then yes. Master Lock had an interesting commercial. It was only a one-second commercial, but it became famous. Recently, Procter & Gamble had the Like a Girl, Throws Like a Girl, Runs Like a Girl commercial, which was, you know, very solid commercial trying to make a point. Pepsi, remember, and Coke, the truck drivers fighting.
Yeah.
But the number, and I don't think they've announced who the number one Super Bowl commercial of all time is, but it's a Pepsi commercial it's a Budweiser commercial versus Coca-Cola, Mean Joe Green. So believe it or not, it's just not just Pittsburghers who love the Mean Joe Green commercial, but that really set the tone for the Super Bowl ads.
Yeah, because I was going to ask about the Bud Bowl. Remember that?
The Bud Bowl's up there, too. Yeah.
That seemed to pull in.
And remember Herding Cats, that one? we can go on and on. So many classics and so many memorable commercials.
Well, here's the big question. Do these ads, as creative as they are, as entertaining as they are, as much as they draw people, you know, or keep people, keep their eyes glued to the television set, are they effective? Are they helping? Is there anything to measure their effectiveness in helping to sell the product, Ron?
Again, these products are inexpensive that we consume. Not only do they launch their commercials, but they launch them for the next, I want to say, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. Like, they keep showing them after the Super Bowl.
Right.
And it has a ripple effect, I would believe, on their sales. Yeah, you might argue, well, if I spend $4 million on a Pepsi or Coke commercial, that's a lot of sodas I got to sell, right? But it's like when they interview the stakeholders at a stakeholder meeting with Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And they go, hey, we had another banner year selling this black fuzzy water. And we all made money and everything was good. One of the major shareholders, she might put her hand up and say, excuse me, it's great that we turned a profit for the last 60 years, staying in the area of growth mm-hmm. without declining. But do we really have to spend whatever the number is they spend?
$5 million
in advertising? Like, couldn't we cut back a little bit, maybe down to $2 or $3 million, and then we'd have a bigger profit? And the CEO will say to the entire group, you know, you're right. Like, we've thought about billboards, internet, television, radio, print. You know, what is this? What really works? And here's the dirty little secret. We don't know what works. But here's what we do know. Collectively, television, radio, print, internet, it all works. And we'll continue to turn a profit. So we don't want to, like Coke did in the mid-80s, we don't want to tinker with the formula of this advertising. Because you know it works. It's worked for 50 years. We've turned a profit.
Audrey, you're dying to jump in here.
Well, I've been studying Super Bowl ads for 25 years. And this has been the question that I've been asked on every single, probably hundreds of interviews I've done. And the bottom line is, this is the only, and I tell my students this in class, this is the only mass marketing event that we have in this country. We have nothing else where everyone, at least one out of every two Americans or more, is watching the game. So this is something we have in common. People talk about it afterwards. It's a big deal. So if you really figure out how much you're paying for each person to be exposed to the advertising, it's pennies. And to advertisers, it's crucial because, as Ron was saying, it does suggest they're the big guys in the game. But also, I mean, people are watching and talking about, as you said earlier, Paul, nope, everybody goes to the bathroom or takes, you know, a food break or something. This is the time where people are focused on the ads, especially if the game isn't good. So, you know, so also they're weighing the fact, should it be in the first quarter, last quarter? Because if it's a close game, you want it at the end. But if it's a blowout, people are going to other stations. So it's really, in a sense, a crapshoot a lot of times.
And so between the ads and the game, of course, and the halftime show, there really is little opportunity for people to find to go to the bathroom or grab something to eat. You almost need that, I think was 30 years ago, NBC put an actual bathroom break into their halftime. Like, this is the 30-second, like, the screen went blank, and that was the time for everybody to get up to go, so much so that they were concerned about how much the flush would, you know, impact, you know, water authorities. In
that's really true. It's called the flush factor. That's absolutely right.
Do we still have a flush factor? Well, nobody knows when to go anymore.
Well, you have to go during the game. I mean, I'm sorry, but you just have to leave during the game because you can't miss the commercials or the halftime show.
Speaking of the game not being as important as the ads, one thing that I'm guessing they didn't have before television came into the picture with football and other sports for that matter were the timeouts just to get the commercials in, where they stop the game and there's nothing going on in the stadium. If you're at the game, you know this. You go to a Steeler game and they'll stop the game. You know, there's a official timeout. You know, that means the network needs to get some commercials in and everybody's just standing around. Has anybody ever talked about the effect that has on the game? Does anybody care about the effect that it has on the game, or are they just making too much money to care anymore?
They show tape delayed games in Europe of NFL games, and they thought these were the toughest players they've ever seen, much tougher than cricket or any other sport, rugby. They didn't, because they edited out the times that they were huddling.
Oh.
And then they thought they just like fell down, got back up, got back on the line of scrimmage and went out again. They didn't realize there was so much time. And for all of us, virtually all your listeners, I think at one point, hopefully, have gone to like a Steeler game. Like, there's a lot of downtime when you're in the stadium.
Yes.
You
know,
you pay $110 to sit in the seat and all you think the players do is huddle. Because they're constantly huddling so we can get the advertisement in. Not to mention, the halftime is like 5 to 10 minutes longer than a regular
halftime. Oh, during
halftime.
The Super Bowl?
Absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
They extend it X number so they can get in, you know, Janet Jackson, Miss Jackson if you're nasty, and Justin Timberlake. We remember the malfunction of the uniform?
Well, of course, but now it's Coldplay, so I don't think that's going to happen.
I hope not.
Yeah, unless Lady Gaga has something go wrong when she sings the national anthem.
But we're not going to have you naked by the end of this song, Paul.
No.
But Justin Timberlake
guarantee that.
Did.
Or the FCC would step in and fine us for that, and you know how they look down on that sort of activity.
Yes,
so
and then what did we follow them up with? Do you remember? What conservative group could we pick?
Was it Paul McCartney?
Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Best halftime show ever.
Was it Paul McCartney?
I think it was Paul McCartney.
That would get my vote.
That followed Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson.
We'll talk about that next year.
Okay.
The best halftime show. In the meantime, I want to thank our guests this year, Audrey Guskey, marketing professor at Duquesne University, and Ron Dick, associate professor of sports marketing at Duquesne. Go Dukes. Thank you
Absolutely.
Both. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Great fun.